We certainly appreciate the song service, the prayer, and the kind remarks made to Brother Darty. We trust that other prayers have gone up and will go up, and we trust that you're praying for the service tonight. I would like to take a lot of time telling you how much I love you and how wonderful it is to be with you and a lot of things like that, but it's a little too hot for preliminaries. So if it's the Lord's will, I want to get to right to what's on my mind. I've said once since I've been over here that I have a severe handicap in preaching. I have to preach what's on my mind. And if I tried to speak on one thing and my mind be on another, that would be a real disaster indeed. But if I follow the impressions of my mind and pray that those impressions are sent from the Lord, I want to look at an expression that we find in Isaiah chapter 64, verse 6. Isaiah says, "But we're all as an unclean thing," and he says, "all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags." I thought for years that that said righteousness. Now, righteousnesses is a bit hard for me to say. But Isaiah does not say here that all our righteousness are as filthy rags, but he says all our righteousnesses. And it doesn't matter what type of righteousness you try to offer the Lord, whether it's legal righteousness, moral righteousness, self-righteousness, whatever it is, it's an unclean thing in the sight of God. The Apostle Paul informs us in Philippians 3:9 that there's more than one type of righteousness. And he says, "And not having mine own righteousness, which is of the law, but the righteousness which is of God through faith, even the righteousness which is by faith in Jesus Christ." And I'll just drop this with you. The same identical righteousness that he says is by faith, he says is through faith. So do not expect me to turn red in the face and strain every leader in my neck trying to tell you the difference between by faith and through faith in the book of Hebrews or elsewhere in the Bible. As my friends in the mountains say, it ain't thar. The Apostle Paul starts the First Corinthian epistle, and he says that he is called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ through the will of God, and the Second Corinthian epistle, it's by the will of God, and it's the same calling. But the Apostle Paul says that there's a righteousness that he does not wish to have. That's his own. He says the righteousness that he wants is the righteousness which is by and through the faith of the Lord Jesus Christ. But Isaiah says that we're all as an unclean thing, and all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags, and we all do fade as a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, have carried us away. If it's the Lord's will, I want to deal tonight with one particular clause in that text. He says here, "And we all, like a leaf, do fade away." We all do fade as a leaf. As I think about what Isaiah has expressed here, and you'll kind of not turn that on me, but just sort of to angle, I can talk all day in a hot place, and I can talk all day in a cold place, but in a draft, I'm a dead duck in 10 minutes, and I'll be hoarse for a week. So just sort of angle it away, if you will, and if it's not angled right, I'll stop and angle it. I'm that much of an old maid. Back to the text that's under consideration. The part of that I want to deal with, if it's God's will, and he says, "We all do fade as a leaf." But most all of us who have spent any time studying the outdoors and studying nature, we recognize that leaves do not all fade the same. He says, "We all do fade as a leaf." But we can think of many different ways that leaves fade. First of all, it's been my experience many, many times in the state of Texas that maybe we'll have some warm weather in late February, early March. There'll be some of the early trees that bloom out. They bloom out very early, and these are the very ones sometimes that are fooled by a late frost. But it's been my experience many times to go out in the spring of the year and see leaves that have turned green. These are the leaves of springtime. And yet we can have a storm or maybe a spring hail, and you go out there later, and the ground is just covered by these little leaves of springtime. Now, according to the Bible and according to just common sense, that is an untimely thing. When nature caused that little leaf to bud and bring forth and develop into a green leaf, it was not the intention of nature that that leaf fall to the ground in the spring in an untimely way. It was the design of nature that that leaf would fully develop, that it would become fully grown in the summertime, and through the wonderful process of photosynthesis, it would draw food from the sunlight and feed and nourish that tree. That leaf has a job to do during the summertime of life. And through the process I'm talking about, it would draw nutrients for that tree. Then there would come a time in the fall that it would hang on for a while and fade, and some of those leaves would turn different colors as we have witnessed the beautiful fall in the Smoky Mountains and the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia and up in New England and places like that. And then finally there would come a time that that leaf would fall to the ground. When we see those leaves on the ground in the springtime, we would certainly call that an untimely event. Now come to the book of Revelation, chapter 6, verse 13. And the Apostle John speaks of a time here when he says, "And the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she's shaken of a mighty wind." Now, if you look over in the center column of a good reference Bible, and by that I mean a college, a Cambridge, a Collins, or a Cambridge, or an Oxford, if you look over in the center column of a good Bible printed in England, and I'm not going to guarantee everything printed here in the United States, but it'll have a flag there with that word untimely. It says, "The stars of heaven fell to the ground, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind." That word untimely is also green. "Even as a fig tree casteth her green figs." Now let's notice what he's saying here. When that fig developed on that particular fig vine or fig bush, if you want to call it that, fig tree, that's what it's called in the Bible, so I'll just call it that. When that little green fig developed on the fig tree, it was not the design of Mother Nature that it fall to the ground green. It was the design of Mother Nature that it would go through a full season, that it would ripen, that it would mature, that it would contain within it the seed to grow other fig trees. That was the design of Mother Nature. But the Apostle John says here that for these fig trees to be cast to the earth, that the stars of heaven fell to the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely or green figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. According to the Bible, there are some things that are untimely. And I put the question before you. If all things are predestinated and unchangeably fixed and determined from the foundation of the world, then how could something be untimely? But this speaks here of something that's untimely. And my friends, the Bible speaks of untimely things. And in my lifetime as a minister, I have had some experiences of dealing with some of God's children that I'm going to compare to the little green leaves of springtime. There was a time just a few years ago that I was called on in one of the largest auditoriums in Graham, Texas, before several hundred people to try to speak words of comfort to a family that had lost a beautiful little four-year-old girl. I'll never forget that because this little girl's only 1 month difference in age from my granddaughter, Claire. And here was this little four-year-old girl, a beautiful girl, in the casket. Beside her was the little Cabbage Patch dolls and other things that my grandchildren were playing with at the same time. And my friends, this is an untimely event. He says, "We all do fade as a leaf." Here was one of the Lord's little children that fell to the ground as one of the little leaves of springtime. We all fade as a leaf, but leaves do not all fade the same. Now, the Bible speaks that there's such a thing as an untimely birth. We come to Job chapter 3, verse 16. A lot of people know John 3:16. How many know Job 3:16? Job says, "Or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been, as infants which never saw light." Now, Job is not speaking of an infant, meaning one in particular. He says, "Or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been, as infants which never saw light." He says, there the wicked cease from troubling, and the weary be at rest. Some nitpicker might say, "Well, that didn't say heaven." Well, it sure enough beats Georgia. In fact, it beats Texas. A place where the wicked cease from troubling, and where the weary be at rest, is good enough for me, because I read in the Bible that there is no peace to the wicked. There is no peace to the wicked. Job says, "Or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been." He says, "There the wicked cease from troubling, and the weary be at rest." Job here speaks of an untimely birth. I ask you once again, if all things are predestined and fixed, unchangeably fixed and determined from the foundation of the world, then how in the name of common sense can some things be considered untimely? I find in the scriptures the Psalms 55, verse 23. David says of wicked men, he says, "But thou, O God, shall bring them down to the pit of destruction." He says, "Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days," but he says, "I will trust in thee." There are untimely events in the lives of God's people as we live here on this earth. He said, "Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days." And I want to look at that for just a minute or two from a purely medical and scientific standpoint before we get into the spiritual side of it. But just looking at it from a purely medical and scientific standpoint, it's well known today that the key to longevity is to have long-lived ancestors. Now, if you want to live a long time, carefully pick your ancestors. Some of you will catch that about 2 in the morning. My son David and I went out of a meeting house one night where we had both preached. A sister came up to me and said, "How did you and Brother David manage to become so very tall?" I said, "We carefully picked our ancestors." The key to longevity is to have long-lived ancestors. From a medical standpoint, it's agreed that a lot of this is in the genes and the chromosomes. There are some people that are born into the world genetically strong. There are some folk who are born into the world, can dip snuff, they can do this, they can do that, and they're going to live 90. I read a book not too long ago. It was written by doctors to doctors. This is doctors writing each other. They said there are some folks over here who are so genetically strong, it doesn't seem to matter what they do, what they eat, they're going to live a long time and be healthy. There are other folks over here born so weak, they're born very weak and sickly. It doesn't matter what they do, they're going to be sick most of their lives. Said, what we're trying to do is to find out something that will help most people that we think is somewhere in between. He says, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. I want you to picture with me just a minute. We have a little boy that's born into the world. That little boy is genetically strong. From a medical standpoint, he is born with the genetics to live to be 90 years of age and be very healthy. All cattlemen know that breeding determines what a cow can do. Feeding determines what it will do. But all the feeding in this world will not put something there that's not in the breeding. That's right. And by the same degree of comparison, all the study, all the application, all the schooling in this world will not put something in a preacher that the Lord didn't put there. Now, on the other hand, you can take an animal that's got the breeding, and you can starve it to death, you can abuse it, you can neglect it. And by the same degree of comparison, we can neglect what the Lord gives us. But all the feeding in this world will not put something in there if the breeding doesn't have it there to start with. Now then, just looking at this from a strictly medical standpoint, I want you to picture with me a young man that was born into the world, genetically strong, won't matter, young lady do just as well. Here's somebody born genetically strong. This person was given the genetic strength to live to be 80 years of age or 90 years of age and live a strong, healthy life. But that person, by drinking alcohol, by fighting in bars, by shooting drugs, by hanging out at 2 o'clock in the morning at the wrong places, by going down the highway here, 90 miles an hour, with a bunch of drunk companions who are under some kind of an influence, that type of person may be dead and in the mortuary at 18 or 19 years of age. Happens all the time. Here's somebody that, because of their habits, did not live out half their days from a medical standpoint. I haven't even dealt with the spiritual side of it yet. He said, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. I've known young ladies that were athletically strong, young men that were athletically strong, that had everything that it took to live a natural life of 80 or 90 years and be strong. But because they ran around with the wrong crowd, they were stabbed, cut to pieces, killed in car wrecks, pumped full of bullets, beaten to death, or something like that at 17 or 18. That's an untimely thing. As the old cowboy said one time, I had my nose broken in 3 places till I learned to stay out of them places. I say to every young person in this congregation, some of you will catch that after a while, I say to every young person in this congregation, and maybe you folks not so young, if you do not want to eat the fruits of sin, stay out of the orchard. There's folks that do not live out half their days, even from the medical standpoint I'm talking about. He said, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. We come to the 7th chapter of Ecclesiastes. And in verse 15, we come to a text where Solomon says, there is that just man that perisheth in his righteousness. He says, there is that wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Now then, if all things are predestinated, determined, unchangeably fixed from the foundation of the world, how is it that there is a just man over here that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man over here that prolongeth his life in his righteousness? And there was something said to me right in this very churchyard many years ago when I was about 33 years old. It took about 15 or 16 years for it to soak in. So I don't expect it to soak in on you preachers tonight. I'm trying to soak it through the head of my son, who's a 40-year-old minister today. But about a number of years ago, there's a fine old elder used to come here back when I was preaching for you in the 70s and 80s. And out there in that churchyard, he said to me one night, said, "Elder Piles, you've accumulated a vast vocabulary in life." But said, "In accumulating a vast vocabulary," said, "there's a little two-letter word you have overlooked that if you don't learn to use it, will lead to the wrecking of your health or the shortening of your life." That little two-letter word is no. I'm much better at using that word than I used to be. I'm not as good as I expect to become. I'm much better at using it than I used to be. I don't claim to be perfect yet, but I do an 80% job using that word. I'm trying to get my son to learn to use that word. He's a slow learner. I was a slow learner. I told you it took me about 16 or 17 years. This elder, H.E. Harris, some of you remember him, at that particular time, he told me, said, "I have wrecked my health." He said, "You see, when I get up to preach, I have to mix heart medicine and drink it while I'm preaching." Some of you here remember that. And he said, "I am largely where I am where I am today, largely because I didn't listen to a particular scripture." Then he quoted me this scripture. He said, "To go everywhere that people want you to go, to sit up at night answering every question they want to ask you, and to eat everything people poke in front of you, and to do everything people can think up for you to do," he said, "that's righteous." Well, there's no wickedness in doing those things. There's no wickedness trying to answer people's questions about what color was the hair on Noah's dog's back. And, you know, did Judas go to hell and all that type of stuff. That's not wickedness. That's righteousness. I mean, to run over here and see the new bacon slicer and down here to see the new stop and go light. All that type of thing. I mean, you go over here and visit somebody who hadn't darkened the door of a church in 25 years. That's all righteousness. But he said, you can perish in your righteousness. He says, there is that just man that perisheth in his righteousness. And he says, there is that wicked man that prolongeth his life in his righteousness. He said, while you're doing all that and will break your health or end your life at an early day, he said, your ungodly neighbor who took a vacation once in a while, went to bed at 8:30 at night, goes fishing on the weekend with his family, takes a vacation once in a while, he said, he'll live on and you'll be dead. I don't expect that to soak in on all y'all tonight. It took about 17 years, but soak in on me. But it's the truth. I'm trying to put it across to my son. And sometimes I want to say to folks, what old Foghorn Leghorn says all the time, "Is any of this I'm a-saying a-seeping through to you?" Remember him talking to little Henry Hawk? "Is any of this I'm a-saying a-seeping through to you, boy? I know you built too long on the ground. It's flying right over your head." That's what I want to say to my son a lot of the time. Now, listen to this. He says, "There is that just man that perisheth in his righteousness." God's people can perish in their righteousness by not using any sense. "There is that wicked man that prolongeth his life in his righteousness. If all things are predestinated and determined, unchangeably fixed, how can it be said that this man prolongeth his life in his righteousness?" Then Solomon warns God's people against extremes. He said, "Be not thou righteous over much." You say, "Well, how can people be too righteous?" Well, I can name you a few ways. Back in that day, the Jews and other folks, they engaged in a lot of fasting. Fasting was a religious ritual, and folks who start fasting believe they're doing something righteous. Sometimes people who fast a lot think they're more righteous than the rest of us. Yes, sir? Do you recognize that you can be righteous over much in your fasting? You can keep on fasting until you starve to death. "Be not thou righteous over much." And this may surprise you. I've been after God's people to read the Bible ever since I've been preaching. Now listen to me. Quickest way on earth I know to go crazy is sit over here in a corner reading the Bible 14 hours a day, divorced from the world of reality. That's happened to a lot of people. Yes, sir? That's happened to a lot of people. He said, be not thou righteous over much. Look at this. He says, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldst thou destroy thyself? Why shouldst thou die before thy time? Proverbs chapter 17, verses 15 through 17. The book, a question is raised in that book, why shouldst thou die before thy time? You mean to tell me I can't die before my time when that text says, why shouldst thou die before thy time? You might say, well, that can't be so, Brother Sonny, because God knows all things. That's right, God knows all things, but I do not, and He hasn't revealed them all to me. From my human standpoint, the way I must look at things in this world is that there are untimely things take place in this world. And my friends, when he says over here, we all do fade as a leaf, there is such thing as an untimely death. I preached the funerals of a few little children that left this life at a very early age. And I think of them as being the little green leaves of springtime. My wife had a baby sister drown when my wife was 7. A little baby sister, 16 months old, walked over into a neighbor's lily pond and drowned. Like it destroyed my in-laws. That's a heartbreaking thing. That happened many long years ago, about 50 years ago, and is still on the top of my mother-in-law's mind all the time. That was an untimely thing. He said, we all do fade as a leaf. There are the leaves, the little green leaves of springtime. That's untimely. Then we see that fully developed leaf. Here's the leaf in the summertime doing what God put it on that tree to do. It's out here in the fullness of its strength, as I say, drawing nutrition from the sunlight, feeding the tree. It's out here in the fullness of its strength. But I've also seen storms and various things take place in the summertime, tornadoes come through, and I have seen the leaves of summer all over the ground. And sometimes God's people fall to the ground in the very fullness of their strength. August 1995, I was preaching in the state of Alabama. Just before I went to bed that night in the nightstand there in Brother Fern Kitchen's home, last thing I did before I went to bed, I looked at a Reader's Digest and they had a little saying in there. It says, if a wrong number in the night bothers you, how about a right number? You ever thought about that? Well, before daylight, I went through an experience of that. I got a call in the wee hours of the morning, and I would to God it had been a wrong number. If a wrong number in the middle of the night bothers you, you might ought to thank God it was the right number. Because most of these calls I get at 2, 3, and 4, well, I don't remember any of them ever been, you know, really good news. In the wee hours of the morning, they were knocking on my door that my wife was on the phone. There's a young man I pastored home. He's about 37 years old. He's a big, strong, muscular young man. He was one of the spark plugs of our church. He was a little league baseball coach, a soccer coach, had a tremendous influence among all the young people over our county. And when we had his funeral, we couldn't hold it in any church around. We had to hold it in the memorial auditorium over in town because there's about 900 people there. There was one of these human spark plugs. When the Lord brought him out of the ignorance and darkness he was in and showed him the truth, he thought the old Baptist church was the jewel of the earth. And he was one of these people could come in a meeting house and just light it up with his presence. The last Sunday he ever attended our church, I asked him to dismiss. I asked him to open the service, And he prayed there that morning, the last service he ever attended. His prayer to God was that my boys and all these young people here will listen to every word Brother Sonny has to say. Here was a young man that had the ability to influence other people to come to our church. He's a type of person a pastor doesn't get very often. I was looking forward to having somebody like him in the church, a real recruiter that could influence other people. And here was somebody that looked like had as much potential as anybody I'd ever baptized. The church I pastored about 35 years. He went out on a midnight call with the power company and was electrocuted on the job about midnight. And I got the call in the wee hours of the morning. Here was somebody, one of the leaves of summertime that went to the ground in the very fullness of his strength. At the very prime of life, the very strongest part of his life, when it looked like he might have the most potential influence, went down as one of the leaves of summertime. I could talk to you about a few other instances like that. Some of you right here have dealt with it. Brother Dorsey and I were out here this morning walking over the Cool Springs Cemetery. And out in that cemetery, I saw examples of everything I'm trying to preach to you tonight. Markers of infants, infants of days, babies, and amazed me how many people out there I knew once upon a time. Some folk out there I knew lost their lives in the very prime of life, including one fine preacher. Well, your brother, right in the very prime of life. In the best years of their lives, they go to the ground as a leaf. Now then, we see that time of year, or season of year, when we naturally assume that the leaves begin to fade. He says we all do fade as a leaf. We come now to the leaves of autumn. And it stands out to me that it's in this particular season of the year that these leaves don't fade the same. You think about that? I was talking to a man one time from a particular province in Canada. And I asked him, I said, what's the fall like up in your country? He said, it's not pretty at all. He said, we don't have but one type of maple tree in my particular country. And said, all they do is turn gold. He said, the world just turns gold. I was in northern Wisconsin preaching one time, and I saw that very thing. It just looked like a solid world, a world of gold beneath me. That's not all that pretty. I've been places where all they did was turn brown. The type of fall we like to see is where we see variety. We see the difference of colors. The mountains out here look like a Persian rug. Those leaves are not fading the same. And my friends, when God's people come over here to the end of the way, we don't fade out the same. I see some folk that they're broken down in body, but they're mentally very sharp. I've gone in rest homes. I've even pastored people. That maybe their bodies began to let them down first, but their minds were still very keen. I pastor people at home that are much older than I am. They have better hearing than I do. On the other hand, I've seen folks didn't seem to be afflicted in body, seemed to have very good bodily health, but they began to lose their mental faculties. Alzheimer's, hardening the arteries. We're not going to fade out of this life the same. Of course, one of the problems that we modern Americans have is that we all want to die real young, but as late in life as possible, you know, maybe 100 or 110. We want to die out there with everything working and in good shape. Now, that takes a lot of money. That's just how vain we are today. I was up in, well, I'd almost tell you where these two of these brethren going to guess it, because they've just been there. I was up in a certain section of the country one time. There's a preacher up there. All the years I've known him, he was bald on top. He came in one night, had a hair piece that was all blended in. I thought he looked nice. He looked 20 years younger. Lots of those preachers up there, and you all are going to guess who I'm talking about. I mean, that brother looked great. I thought, you know, man, if that ever happened to me, that's a good idea. Just blend it in, look 20 years younger. Those brethren up there got around him, started heckling him about that hair piece. And I walked up and I started noticing. I have a way of noticing things. Every one of those preachers that were heckling him had false teeth. I said, brethren, I said, your teeth wore out, so you bought you some teeth. His hair wore out, so he bought him some hair. What's the difference? Well, that broke up the crowd. But most of us in this world today, we are so petty, we're so spoiled, and we're so vain that we'll pay $80,000 to keep the heart pumping. We want all these different parts and everything working well. I mean, we want to live as long as possible and die with everything in tip-top order. Maybe so if you can afford it. Very few people so blessed. Sooner or later, we're going to come to that time of life. We're going to come to the autumn of life when we're going to begin to fade. But have you ever thought about when you go up in the Smoky Mountains or the Blue Ridge or the Shenandoah Valley, that that's actually the time of year when those leaves are the most beautiful? That's when we enjoy them the most. The Bible tells us in the 16th chapter of Proverbs, verse 31, that the hoary head, that is the white head, is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. God's people, when we reach the point in life that I'm talking about, certainly, we're in the autumn of life, and certainly we're going to fade. But that should be the time when we are showing our very best qualities. By that time in life, we should have learned something about patience. The Bible says, grow in grace and in the knowledge of the truth. Grow in grace and in the knowledge of the truth.
5:2.
In grace and in the knowledge of the truth. Grow in grace and in the knowledge of the truth. Somebody asked me a couple of years back, said, according to what I hear, said, you're just as firm on church discipline as you ever were. I said, I'm just as firm as where I stand, but I'm a lot kinder in executing it. Now, figure that out. I stand right where I stood when I was 25. But I think I've learned to handle things in a kinder way. I hope I have. Look at this. That hoary head is a crown of glory if it be if. There's an if there. Because a long life is not always a sign that God is blessing you. Now, some people get that in their heads. You know, since I've lived to be 90 or 95, that is a blessing from God, and that means I'm right about everything, and so I have a right to be a tyrant over my family, crack the whip, it's my way or the highway. I've dealt with folks like that. To begin with, we come to Proverbs chapter 21, verse 7, and Job raises the question. He says, wherefore do the wicked live, become old, and are mighty in power? He said, sometimes wicked people live to be real old also. Wherefore do the wicked live, become old, or mighty in power? Look at this. He said, their seed is established in their sight. I remember back in the 1960s when the news media and folk like that thought they'd come up with a new term. These hippies that were out here marching in the streets were protesting against the establishment. They thought they'd coined a term. They were anti-establishment. That meant the government. That meant the big business. Anybody up here in power was part of the establishment. They thought they'd come up with a new term. Did you know the Bible labeled the rich and powerful people of the earth the establishment about 4,000 years ago? We come over here in the book of Job, and he says, wherefore do the wicked live, become old, they're mighty in power? He said their seed is established in their sight. They could see to it that their seed become part of the establishment. While these very same people vote in laws to destroy your public schools, they themselves have the money to send their children to private schools. Right? I'd give you a few stats on that right out of Washington, D.C., but it's too hot for statistics. Oh, yeah, I've got a bunch of stats on where the senators and representatives and folks like that send their children. While they vote in laws to destroy your public schools, they have the money and the clout to send their children to private schools. They have the money and the clout to get their children in the country clubs and the best societies. They have the money and the clout to put their children in government offices, governor's offices, and put them even in the White House. They can see to it that their seed is established, that their seed becomes part of the establishment. But you see, this is no blessing to God. He says, God says they spend their days in wealth and in a moment go down to the grave. Therefore they say unto God, depart from us, for we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. Some folk think it's cruel when God in Matthew chapter 25 says to the wicked, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire. But I inform you that the wicked have already said that to God in their hearts. They say, depart from us, for we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. Listen, a long life is not necessarily a sign of God's blessing. He says, wherefore do the wicked live? Now, cursing, filthy language, telling filthy jokes and all this, that's bad in a teenager. It's bad in a young person. But when you hear young people or teenagers or people in their 20s or 30s, and they're so skillful at cussing that they can cuss for 10 minutes and somebody says, you should say cursing. Well, no, the ones I live around cuss. They don't curse. I mean, maybe you have high-class cursers in Georgia. I mean, we've got low-down, old-fashioned cussers out where I come from. I've been around some of these old cussers that could cuss for 10 minutes and never repeat themselves. Well, when you hear that out of a teenager, somebody in their 20s, there's a hope that that person will outgrow it. I've known of many one that did, including some preachers of the gospel. That's right. I've known men that did that. I've known people that once upon a time did those things, and God bless them, they rose above it. But my friends, that's especially disgusting when you see it in an old man. Mm-hmm. That's right. When you see an old person, all they've got coming out of their mouth is a bunch of filth, that's especially disgusting. Because that's the point in life in which the leaves ought to be showing forth their best. Yeah. By that time of life, we should be setting an example in patience. Ought to be able to control our anger a little better. Yes. I'll tell you a story, a very quick story, to illustrate what I'm talking about. There's a preacher I know who used to preach for another group of people. He told me one time, said, when I was in that group of people, and I was a young, hot-headed preacher, said, I was visiting with another young, hot-headed preacher, and said that other young, hot-headed preacher was very angry at an old preacher that had a lot of influence in that group. He said, I was about to leave this young preacher and go straight to the home of this old preacher. This young preacher told him, said, when you go see, and I'll almost call his name, he's well known in their group, said, when you go see so-and-so, give him a message from me. He said, what's the message? Young preacher said, you tell him that I said he's a natural-born liar. Well, that preacher told me, said, I was young and hot-headed, and said, I didn't have any more sense. Said, I went to that old preacher's home. He was the editor of a paper among that group of people. Said, I went to that old preacher's home. We were sitting there eating supper. He said, I didn't have any more sense, but I told him, said, I have a message for you from, and I'm coming close to calling the names here. Probably wouldn't mean much to most primitive Baptists, but some of you may be familiar with this group. Said, I have a message here from, he said, what? He said, what's the message? He said to tell you that you're a natural born liar. He said, I was just sitting there expecting that old preacher to explode, get real mad. Said, he just went on calmly eating his meal. He said, you know, for that matter, according to the Bible, we all are. That's right. That's right. According to the Bible, I'm a natural-born liar. According to the Bible, you're a natural-born liar. According to the Bible, you're a natural-born liar. That's right. 58 Psalm says, the wicked are estranged, cut off from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. You never had to teach your children to tell godly whopper lies. You have to teach them the importance of telling the truth. Old preacher sat there said, well, for that matter, we all are. He said, but I trust I've experienced the second birth, which has taught me not to lie. The preacher telling me that story, he said, I learned a great example from that. See, here was an old man who through long experience and long wisdom had learned what the poet said. This too shall pass. This too shall pass. This too shall pass. This too shall pass. Those are hard lessons to learn in life. I did not learn them overnight. Sometimes I have to take a refresher course. You brethren, you folks out here, keep that in mind in case someone sends you a message that you're a natural-born liar. We all are. Yes? Look at this. You see what that old elder was doing, though? He was showing some of the best qualities of his life here in the autumn of his life. In the fall of his life, he is showing some of the best qualities of his life. He was showing an example here of patience, of long-suffering, and several of the graces that are mentioned in Galatians 5:22. He's showing them. Some of the most disgusting things I see going on among our people today. I see men like myself. I see a few men like myself who have been in the ministry, like some of you brothers, some of us here, that have been in the ministry 30 and 40 years, doing everything they can to destroy or hamper the ministries of men young enough to be their sons. You hear what I just said? Sure got quiet. It's a disgusting thing when some of us who've been in the ministry 30 or 40 years are doing everything we can to destroy or hamper the ministries of men young enough to be our sons. Amen. Thank you. What we should be trying to do there is set a better example for them. See that? Set an example. Because we're all coming to the autumn of life. Is that going to be the time when you do like the leaves and the Smokies and the Shenandoah Valley? Is that going to be the time when it can be said of you that the hoary head, the white head, is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness? David used his life's experience to encourage other people. Sometimes people try to use their life story to discourage other people. I remember back when my children were growing up, some of these old primitive Baptist sad sacks would tell me, you better enjoy them now, because once they get out of high school, you've lost them forever. I have news for you. I have more in common with my son and more to talk to my son about today than I've ever had. We just don't have enough time. I have more in common with my daughter. My wife has more in common with her daughter. Now my daughter's become a mother. My wife and my daughter have more in common than they've ever had. I enjoy my children today more than I ever have in my life. Some people use their life's experience to discourage other people. In the 37th Psalm, David used his life's experience to encourage other people. He said, I have been young, and now I'm old. There's an old saying, when you're young, always remember someday you'll be old. When you're old, always remember that you were once young. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. Sometimes when I start losing patience with 15 and 20 and 25 year olds, I have to remember I was once 15, 20, 25. When you're young, always remember you'll someday be old. When you're old, don't forget you were once young. That'll cause you to have a lot more slack on young preachers if you're old, and old preachers if you're young. Mm-hmm. Right. Now then, we see that here's the season of the year when most leaves go to the ground. But it's been my experience a number of times after the fall was over and after the leaves are on the ground. In my home state of Texas, to go out in the coldest part of December and January, maybe go to under an old native pecan tree, and it's December, January, and the fall is long behind us. And up there in that tree be a few old leaves still hanging on. Here's the old leaves of wintertime. And it's the experience of some people to live to be 95 or 100 years of age. We have a young man in my home church just had his 100th birthday. Some folks live to be 95 or 100. I preached a funeral of a lady one time that she'd live to be about 105. Back when I was young, I used to assume when I preached a funeral of somebody 90 or 95 or 100, there'd be a throng or a great big crowd. I don't know about you preachers, but I found that that's sometimes when I find the very smallest group together. I've indicated to you tonight the largest crowds I've ever spoken to at funerals has been the funerals of babies and young men who died in their strength. I used to think when I'd be asked to preach a funeral of a 95 or 90-year-old or 100-year-old or 98-year-old, that, oh, what a crowd there'll be there. But sometimes those crowds are very small. Those folk, many of them had outlived their own children. Mm-hmm. They'd usually outlived a husband or a wife. They'd outlived, a lot of them outlived their own children, sometimes all their own children. They'd outlived their friends. They'd outlived their generation. I've reached a point in life where I feel sad for folks like that. They're the old leaves of wintertime. But my friends, regardless, if you fade away in the strength of summer or you fade away in the fall, like most will, or if you live on to 100 or 105 and you're one of the old leaves of wintertime, according to nature, if the Lord doesn't come back, we're all going down. I look forward to living in a world or a realm that's described in Psalms 1:1, and really the only person that ever lived up to this is the Lord Jesus Christ. To begin with, this is a word picture of Christ, but it's also, of course, an example. He left us an example that we should walk in His steps. David says, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor sitteth in the seat, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate both day and night. He shall be like a tree that's planted by the river of water. His leaf also shall not wither. Center column says, fade. His leaf shall not wither. His leaf shall not fade. I look forward to living in a world where, as the songwriter put it, the roses never fade. Where the leaves never fade. We're going to fade away in this life. But while we do, let's glorify God all the way down. I thank you and thank you for your good attention. God bless you.